This is day two of our National Federation of the Blind Senior Retreat, our virtual meeting, Live the Life You Want. And Wayne Marshall is our lead instructor. So, Wayne, you're on.
Okay. Well, hello and welcome back, everyone, to our second day of our 2020 Seniors Retreat and second day of our cane travel. Today, we will be led by Winford Haynes. I want to introduce Winford Haynes, who is a veteran, if you will, in this field of cane travel and indeed working with and teaching our the blind. Winford has been teaching cane travel for about 25 years. He has worked at the Cole Center in Austin, Texas for 20 years. And here I thought I was a veteran working in this field for 20 years. He has been working in the field of blindness for 50 years. First 25 years in the Commission for the Blind in New Mexico, where he even was a teacher of our own Dr. Eddie Bell. So he goes back quite a ways and very, very knowledgeable and well experienced in the area of blindness and also in cane travel, where he's been working the last 25 years teaching cane travel. So without further ado, Winford, welcome and thank you for volunteering to lead today's discussion and class on cane travel orientation mobility.
All right. Well, I want to thank everybody again for having the opportunity to, work with you guys and talk with you today about orientation and mobility. Yes, I worked in New Mexico for those 25 years, and the first 20 of those years, I was a physical education instructor. And so we actually had a physical education program at the center. We had a little gym that we used, and so I would work with the students, teaching them how to do the different exercises, weightlifting. We get students that would come in that had been runners, so I started a running program there, and we would take them to the School for the Blind track, and they had a rail around the track, so then I would take them out and work with them on learning how to run. And we eventually started a judo class there. And that's when I worked with Dr. Bill in the phys ed and a little bit of judo / aikido. So that was, and then I began teaching orientation and mobility. And it's really a passion of mine. I like to see people come in and start from scratch and learn how to get around. And it's so really cool to see when they get that independence and get out and start doing things. So, some of the things that we're going to talk about today is going to be, when you're walking in indoor travel, we're going to be talking about indoor travel. And that's, you know, usually when we start our students is on indoor, and I usually start them walking up and down a hall, working with them using the open palm grip. And as we're doing that open palm grip, I've kind of started doing some different strategies as far as getting them to be able to get comfortable with open palm as soon as they can do it. So the one thing that I would do is to get them to get the arc, I will have them put their left hand, their non-dominant hand under their wrist in front of them, and just let them kind of rest their wrist on their hand on their wrist on their hand. And then I kind of explain to them how to do open palm. Then what I do is I'll explain to them, if you're standing on a clock, think about where 2 o'clock is and where 10 o'clock is. And then I want you to tap your cane at that width. And when they get to that width, then I'll say, now maybe a little bit wider on your right and a little bit less on your left. And then I kind of let them hear where that cane is hitting so they can get a feel for it, but they can kind of get a mental sound picture of where that cane is tapping so that they can kind of gauge that as they're walking. Then a lot of times I will tell them, at this point, I want you to arc it even wider than that as you're walking, because eventually you're going to want to make it narrow. So I have them start out walking and arcing it really wide. Then I will say, and the next thing we're going to do, I will explain to them walking in step. So the cane hit to the left, your right foot's forward, and vice versa. What I will do then is say, now that's ultimately what you want to be doing, but we're working and practicing inside here. All I want you to do is just, no matter what your foot, no matter what foot is stepping down, I just want to hear your cane step, tap, step, tap, step, tap. So you can get used to that. So you're thinking about only the open palm arcing the cane left and right. I want your head up so you can hear the echo coming back to you down the hall. And so that you're not thinking about, okay, where am I in step? Am I not in step? I just want you to work on balancing that arc and just listening to the sound of it. And then eventually, I'll have them start doing the actual walking in step. Typically, their body just says, this doesn't feel right. So it'll start, they'll get in step. Then this other grip that I will teach them is a pencil grip. And when I'm teaching them the pencil grip is, you know, I just tell them to explain to them if they can show me how they hold a pencil or a stylus, if they've, you know, used a stylus before. And if not, then I just kind of explain them how to hold it, show them how to do it. And then I have them do the tapping and arc as they came, the same kind of arc left and right, keeping it wide, covering your shoulders. What I do when working on that grip, that open palm, eventually what I'll do is I'll say, so they'll ask the question about the cane jabbing them in the stomach. So what I'll do is I'll have them practice standing there. I'll say, now we're going to just go from open palm to pencil grip, and we're going to do that a couple 10 times. And then we're going to do it as quickly as you can. So from pencil grip to from open palm to pencil grip. And I have them do that so that I've explained to them. So now we're going to start about 10 feet from the wall. And I want you to walk up to this wall. When your cane tip hits that wall, I want you to switch immediately to pencil grip and walk up to the wall. Put your cane up there so you can look for the doorknob, say. So you walk up there and then get your cane against the wall, lift it up a little bit, and then slide the whole cane both left and right to find the doorknob. So I have them practice doing that so that they can get used to when they're walking outside or even on carpet and their cane gets caught because the cane tip might be wearing out. Then you can flip it to open palm or pencil grip as quickly as you can. Those are the things that, you know, when we're doing that open palm and the pencil grip, and we just do a lot of walk in the building to get used to that. The thing about at the center here in Austin, which is actually kind of is cool, is that along the wall, the baseboard is more like, it's like cement. And if you bring your cane up, it's about the height of a curb, actually. So if you bring your cane up, you hit the wood paneling. So sometimes what we'll do is I'll have them practice shorelining so that they can start working on finding it. Let's say in this case, you're looking for a specific door. I will have them do that shoreline. And as they're arcing, I'll explain to them, okay, so as your cane's hitting the bottom of this wall, as long as it sounds like it's hitting tile or, then your arc is low enough so that you're going to catch things that are in front of you. If it comes up and hits that panel sounding, then that means you're arcing your cane too high. So it really does help them to kind of get an idea of how high the wall is or their arc is. So we do a lot of work on that. And then we start also working on the pencil grip so that I'll have them shoreline with a pencil grip looking for the door. Sometimes what we'll do, what I'm doing is also when we're walking out in the hallways, and I want them to try and start listening for openings so that as they're walking down the hall, they can, when there's an intersecting hallway, they can listen for that. And you kind of explain to them that it's kind of, when you're in this hallway, it feels like it's kind of closed in. And then as you walking down the hall, you may feel some sort of a change. Sometimes there's a little bit of a breeze that comes through that hallway because now it's not being blocked by the wall on your side. Sometimes you may be able to feel that it's a hallway that's got a lot of sunlight in it. So as you're walking in this hallway, it's kind of cool, then you may be able to sense that it's warmer in that direction, so you know that there's an opening. Also, always having them listen for sound cues, so because the sound cues can help you with determining where hallways are, doorways are. The interesting thing is students will hear someone close a door and know, oh, there's the hallway. And I'm like, yeah, that's it. There you go. So you can, let's go down that hallway. And say, well, I think I'm cheating. I'm like, no, you're not cheating. That's part of what you're learning, is you're learning how to use all the different sound cues in your environment to help you identify if it's an actual hallway, if it's a room, if it's a little office, snack bar. It's all of those things are kind of involved in that. We work with students on, as they're tapping the cane, to listen for the echo of the cane bouncing off of the walls, so that you'll hear hitting the wall. And as you, even if you approach a room on the side of you, because your cane's long enough, you might be hearing the echo on your left. Then all of a sudden there's a doorway. Well, that echo's not going to bounce back to you, so it's going to go away. So now that might give you an idea, oh, there's something over here. So in the beginning, we'll have them go over and check and see what it is, find out if it's a classroom, an office, a little cubby hole where there's a water fountain or something like that. So we're constantly working with our students on trying to use their ears. We may have them just stop and just listen and have them identify where you're hearing sounds. They have a door in front of you to the right. I want you to kind of tell me where that is, so we can get them to learn where the cafeteria is without like shorelining the wall to find it specifically. I want you to do it by sound. Let's see. The shorelining, I kind of say the shorelining is exactly like curb travel. So basically when we get outside, I tell them that it's the same shorelining and curb travel are really about the same. Let's see. Trying to think of what else. Actually also when you're walking, when you're maybe walking down the hall and you're shorelining, sometimes your cane will hit to the left and you're going to be able to identify that, of course, that it's carpet. Or sometimes it might be like the carpet for the rooms might feel different than a rug that you encounter at a doorway. So you're going to know the difference in whether this is an actual carpet for the room or a rug outside of that doorway. So that's a lot of what we're going to be doing, be working with our students in that kind of thing. So and I think right now, I guess I could probably just take questions. Unless any of the other instructors want to jump in with some other things.
Well, Winford, hi, this is Wayne, and I heard mm-hmm. you talking about the types of cues, and that's part of our the terminology that I was mentioning yesterday. Mm-hmm. That's one word I didn't mention. And so you mentioned cues, but there's several different types of cues. There are auditory cues, but there's, you know, the environmental cues, there's physical cues, there's even cues, you know, you can, like you mentioned the cafeteria, so you can mm-hmm. you can smell that there's food coming from that area. We were talking about using everything that we have available to us, and that would be one. There's textual cues, understanding the different surfaces that you're walking on when you go from one room to another. I think that's important to recognize, like we were talking yesterday about the different surfaces outside that you encounter. You're going to encounter different surfaces inside. I like how you mentioned that the wall from the the tile, what was it, the wood on the wall versus
yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and yeah. I think it's important that we use those things. You can even use them, like we're talking indoor travel, in your home. If we take the time to recognize you have wood floors, you have linoleum floors, you have carpet on the floors, you have a rug on the floor, and all of those surfaces make a different sound. And you're going to get feedback from those, and it's going to be different. So if we just really just be conscious of those sounds, it can help us realize where we are as we travel indoors. I think
we do have a question.
Okay.
Hi, it's Judy. I don't know if everyone is like me, but you did tell us a lot of things yesterday, Wayne, and I wonder if one of you wants to review the open palm tick for those of us. You talked about us using it, but we probably could use a reminder of how we do it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's one of the things that I think is very interesting about open palm is because, you know, for every person that does open palm, it's a little bit different. So I can explain to you guys how I do it. And then, you know, I can, what I do when I'm going to do open palm is, I'm going to hold the handle of my cane, and I have the top part of the handle, maybe 2 inches or 2 fingers sticking out the back of my hand, of my, the heel of my hand. And so it's kind of resting on my index finger where it meets the hand. The best way that when I explain this to my students is I'll explain to them, if you take a tube of toothpaste and where you have to unscrew it, a small one, or even a little bit bigger size, and you put that tube between your thumb and index finger, as you turn it, your thumb is going to go to the left and your index finger is going to tweak a little bit to the right, if that makes any sense. So when I move my cane, that's how I do it. So I'm using my thumb and index finger to initiate the movement of the cane. So my thumb's pushing the top handle to the left and my index finger tweaks it to the right. And my other 3 fingers are just kind of relaxed. And then they catch the cane and then I bring them back to I close them up to bring them back to to the thumb. So that's kind of how I do it.
We have another question.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, I think it told me to unmute again. This is Judy. I think my hand didn't probably go down.
I'm sorry.
Does that answer your question, Judy?
Does it answer you?
Yeah. I think so. I think people might get it if they actually go look at their cane right now and try and do what you just did.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a way of supporting your cane and pivoting it with the less amount of resistance and that's on your wrist. It makes it just easy to pivot from left to right, and especially if it's centered and out. It's easy to go from left to right. We had a lot of questions about how would you know that you're going shoulder to shoulder, but if you're centered, it's probably a little easier than having it on one side or the other.
Yes, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Ed has a question.
Zoom meeting. Audio now unmuted.
Ed, yes, sir.
You have a question?
Oh, yes. Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. And Wayne, my question is for the white cane. I'm trying to do that thumb and the index finger now and as we speak, you know. But I guess my thumb is tweaking it to the left, and it's like I'm rolling it. Is that, and my 3 fingers are relaxed. Is that the way you're saying it?
Yeah, they relax, and right once you move your thumb towards your fingers, then it's going to catch it. Your fingers are going to catch the cane and bring it from the right side to the left side. So some people call it rolling. I just kind of feel, I kind of think about, like, the way I explain it to my students is whenever you're playing thumb wars and you're moving that thumb back and forth, left and right,
right,
to try and catch somebody's thumb, I kind of explain it as moving your thumb like you're doing thumb wars. So you're moving it from the upright position, almost like you're arcing it over to touch your pinky. I mean, your pinky, yeah.
Okay, I guess that's going to take some practice. So thank you, though.
It does take practice. Now, another thing that I've implemented to help my students figure out how to do open palm is I have these little relaxation, the balls that they have that use for relaxation, and I roll those in my hand, and as I'm rolling those in my hand, that mimics the open palm technique.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I think what you're saying is when you're pushing over with your thumb, I think the questions come back to how do you get it back over to the other side? And I think that by relaxing that thumb, it's going to automatically come back over from the pressure of the index finger.
Yeah, and the other three fingers.
And the other three fingers.
Yeah.
I do have another question.
Yes, this is Estelle calling from Colorado, and I've been using a cane for several years now and had some limited teaching from CCB, and actually Wayne was one of my teachers. Hi, Wayne.
Hello.
And I've been learning something new every day, yesterday and today, and I'm especially pleased with learning about how to use the thumb and the finger to kind of roll or turn the cane, because that will help avoid wrist injuries and carpal tunnel syndrome, which I deal with. And so I think that's a great idea. I've just been trying it while you explained it. And by doing the thumb and the finger, turning them like that, you're not wearing out your wrist. So thank you for that. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's the idea behind that, is to alleviate that pressure on your wrist, because a lot of people will just use the wrist going back and forth and keep a grip on it, but this alleviates that stress on the wrist. Yet
right.
Supporting the... Good. I'm glad to see that you're still using those skills. Keep it up.
Learning more, and it's a blessing to be able to come to this retreat and learn more skills by phone. Thank you.
We're glad to have you. Okay. So, yeah, and any other questions that we...
Well, this is Ruth, and can you hear me?
Yes, I
okay. And so one of the things I was going to say about sound cues, you know, when you go to stores or buildings, doctor's offices that have all glass fronts, a good technique, especially with canes that do have metal tips, is that when you're going up to the building, your cane tip is going to hit or be able to tell the door, because the door is going to have a metal frame, and it'll be a very kind of a hollow sound as opposed to touching, you know, hitting the glass front of the building. So that is a really precise sound cue that you can get to find the door.
Yes, and some of the buildings that you walk along, the bottom glass might be a metal frame might sound more solid, but when you come to the door itself, the door is going to be kind of more of a tinny sound, and that's when you know for sure that you're at the door.
Yeah, that's right. You may even encounter the building itself, and it may be brick or stone or something, but when you hit that door, it's metal encased glass, and then most of them have that entryway, a foyer or a breezeway or something that echoes. You get that echo response very, very much so when you hit that door, the entry doors.
We do have another question.
816.
Yes, thank you. Could you talk a bit about how sound cues for the same location might change during the day, and how you would adjust for that if you're trying to find the same location at different times of the day? Thank you.
Let me see. I'm not sure with that one.
I could certainly tell you that it may be more pronounced in the evening hours than in the day, because it's quieter. You don't have the external noise that you would have in the evening as much as you would during the day, and especially in areas with less traffic. It can vary based on the level of traffic that you have in those particular areas. So you may be able to hear it maybe even more pronounced, I think, in the evening hours than day hours, and based on if it's a very high traffic area than not.
Yeah, and I think some of the other things might be like you may have one sound cue, but let's say there's a big truck parked next to a certain area, then that sound cue that's normally there is going to be different because of that truck maybe blocking, like you're walking down the sidewalk and across the street, you might typically hear the echo off of a building. But now as you're walking down the same sidewalk on your side of the street now, there's a big truck or van or something parked. And so now it's blocking that sound cue of the building across the street. So now you're not sure where you are.
We have another question.
720. This is Carol Wright. Do you hear me?
Yes. Hi, Carol.
Yes.
Hi. I have a couple of questions. Well, one is on posture. I have a very bad back, and I have been, before I started using my cane, I was using my trekking poles. They helped me because they made me stand up very straight. I find, you know, I tend to hunch over. And I do use my trekking pole sometimes as a second cane. It helps me to stay upright and it keeps me in balance. Is there anyone who combines trekking poles with the cane? I know it's a weird question, but I have a lot of back problems, and if I can stand up very straight, then I have less pain. This may be a question out of the box.
Not necessarily, because yesterday I mentioned using a straight cane with a support cane, and that would be similar, because both of them will help with balance. But support cane would help more with, you know, if you need to lean on it, versus a tracking cane would be more for balance and maybe keeping you upright. So that would be the difference. But yes, we've taught individuals with using dual canes, and it's very helpful because one would is mainly for support, whether it, you know, for balance, and then the other is to help you navigate your environment.
Yeah.
Someone's tea is ready, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, I'm sorry. I haven't had my cup of coffee this morning yet.
Okay. And you had another question? Did you have another question? Did we answer that question?
Oops, I'm sorry, I muted her.
Bill has a question.
Bill Borner?
Okay.
Yes, good morning and afternoon, everyone. It's been great so far, the senior retreat. Thank you all. I wanted to mention something I experienced on a training day where I noticed what they call a sound shadow, where I walked next to a big telephone pole and all of a sudden the traffic noise I'd been listening to disappeared. I just wanted to interject that. You can also listen to what you don't hear all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. We've experienced that, and even you know, buildings would do that. A pole could do that. You know, the larger it is, the more it affects the sound and block the sound. And that's the same thing even with the sun as well. And all those are you know, could be hindering, but they could be useful also. You can realize where you are using those things along your journey, especially if it's somewhere that you go on a regular basis.
Yes, one of the places that I teach in the area where I work is there's an entrance that comes into the complex near where I work, and on either side of it there's some big walls with the name of the TWC and things like that. So as you're walking down the sidewalk, right when you get near that driveway entrance, as a car goes by, you hear it bounce off the wall, the echo, and sometimes it's kind of weird, but it sounds like if the car's, say, going south, sometimes when you hear that echo, it actually sounds like it's going, like, north beside you, you know, on the wrong side of the road. But you get to know that echo and that sound at one time at one of the crosswalks, before you are walking on the street, before you get to this particular crosswalk, it was heavily painted with, they had some kind of a textured paint on that crosswalk. So as you're walking down the street, you could actually tell where the crosswalk was before you actually got there, because you would hear the cars when they ran over it. You would know that it was something there, something different. So
I like what you mentioned before when the lady asked the question about the how sounds could change based on different times of day. You mentioned if a vehicle was there or not. Of course, it would increase the amount of echo that you get. And so I think it's kind of important to, in our different environments, especially if you go into a doctor's office or in your home, realizing that there's more than one cue that you can use at a time. There's auditory and there's the physical cue, like you can hear a sound or you can hear how something echoes, and you can also associate that texture with that sound and use more than one thing, because it could change in the evening versus the daytime. Mm-hmm. And so if you go to, so it may be different for you, but if you have more than one thing to use, then I say use it. We have to use everything that's available to us to be successful in being independent and traveling independently. So, over here, when I come to this place, there's a pole. Well, that pole could be gone next time you go. So then what?
That's what happens we have sometimes our maintenance crew or our custodial crew, we will move the rug that's by the door for the exit entrance. And the mm-hmm. students, a lot of times, will just be shoreline up and down that hall looking for that rug, and we've moved it. So, and we're constantly telling them, okay, listen to where this snack bar is, and you can tell from the snack bar more or less where that door is. And so we really work a lot with them on that.
Right. It may be the soda machine in the hallway. You know, I remember at the center, a lot of students used to use that, or the sound of the tin, metal cane hitting the lockers or something. And you know, so you have more than one thing, because what if they move that soda machine? You know, you still have the lockers, or they move that rug, you still have the other thing. So things could change, but you still, you know, have more than one thing to use. Or when I come up to this building at this time of day, the sun is on my back, or the sun's on my left, or, well, today there's no sun. Uh-oh, what I'm going to do? And so then you use something else. And when I'm working with different students, I say, let's use everything that we have available to us. And initially, you're not focusing on that, and you're so concentrated on where you are and being safe and traveling. Well, but you can use everything that's available as you become more familiar with that environment and you become more conscious of your environment, then you should be more conscious of those cues that are available to you.
This is Ruth again. This kind of something I'd like to interject. I'd like you to talk about walking sighted guide. But before you do that, I want to encourage our retreaters that, you know, all these things that we're talking about are helpful, and the way that you learn to use them is every time you go out of your house, that you have your cane in your hand, whether you're walking with sighted friends or not. Because if you go out with your spouse or sighted friends and family members or neighbors, whatever you're doing, and you're relying on them for information to get you wherever you're going, you won't be paying attention and developing these skills, because you're relying on somebody else's judgment, not your own. So if you have your cane in your hand and you're using it while walking with another person, you have much more opportunity, and you can sometimes point things out to your sighted colleague that they're not aware of. But maybe you could talk about walking sighted guide and how to do that when you have a cane.
Okay. So, when you're doing sighted guide, typically what I would do is we kind of explain to them to go ahead and kind of put your cane in a pencil grip, and it's a little bit extended. We can arc it a little bit towards the person that's guiding you, but then you're making sure to arc outside of your body to clear yourself, but still come a little bit over to your left. Let's say you're being guided and you got the person's right arm Okay, you still want to come a little bit over because you might actually be being guided by a low vision person that has a fair amount of vision, but yet might not see that there's a pole that's been cut off on the middle of the sidewalk, but it's been cut down waist level. And so you're walking along and they happen to walk more like they're going to go between the pole. The pole's going to be between you and them. And, but they don't see it. And then you're going to bang your knee on it. So if you're arcing your cane and your cane's probably going to catch that, pole. So, we always tell students to still use your cane, do your arcing. So this way, they're not responsible for telling you that there's steps going up or down. That's got to be on you. And I like how you said having them when they leave their home that they should have their canes. Our students at the center, they'll say, well, I'm going to go out of my room and I go down to this place without my cane. I said, well, because you're in this residential area, would you ever go down to the laundry room without your shoes on? They're like, oh no. And I'm like, okay, so if you don't leave your room without your shoes, then that's what you need to think about when you leave your home. If you go barefooted, leave your cane. If you always wear shoes, always have your cane when you leave your home. So, yeah.
We have a question from 410. Hello. Maybe not. 9259. Okay, maybe not. We do have Judy again. I'll ask Judy to unmute. Go ahead, Judy.
Hi. I want to add something both to the sighted guide thing and the whether to take your cane with you. I am totally blind, and I've been a guide for many a blind person, and they for me. So I think that I've decided to start calling it a human guide because my guides often are blind people and they are very good at it. And I do exactly what you say, whether the person is sighted or blind. I use my cane a little bit. I'm not arcing it the way I would if I were doing it by myself, but I want to cover where they are not going to be covering it. And the other thing is my rule for whether I take a cane with me or not is whenever I am going somewhere where the environment can change without my knowledge, I will take my cane. So I live in an apartment building and I'm pretty sure that on my floor, which is just a straight hall with 12 apartments on it, it won't change. So sometimes I'll take that chance, but I have learned that sometimes there's a washing floor sign in the center. So even then, I probably should. So that's what I have to say.
We do have a question, too.
Okay, 470 again. 470, you're unmuted.
Hello. Let me unmute.
You're unmuted, sir. Go ahead.
You're unmuted.
Okay. My name's Les Cameron from Georgia. And maybe I'm paranoid, but I have a cane at every one of my exits. My two sliding doors going out to the backyard, my front door, my back door. I have one in the garage next to the garage button where you push it to open it. And I also have a hold-up cane in the car because I always think in case of an emergency, the cane that I have on my belt, I may not get to, but at least if I'm going out a door, I can grab a cane. So I hope you don't think I'm paranoid about having a cane because it's scary to be out there without a cane and it is a major problem.
I'm thinking about listening to you say that, and I'm like, you know what? That is an absolutely, that's a great idea.
I think to have a spare cane, you should have a spare cane, and even at home, you never know when there may be an emergency or it could be a fire. You know, we hope not, but of course, if there is, you're prepared. You could have left your, I would say always keep a cane. If you have an extra cane, always keep a cane in your bedroom. You don't use it in your house anywhere else. You know, when you walk freely around your home, at least keep one in your bedroom because you have to wake up in the middle of the night and just go and get out of there. At least you can put your hands on that spare cane and get out of there.
Hello, this is Pat from Baltimore. How do you replace the tip on a cane?
Are we talking a metal tip, right? The metal cane.
Yes, right.
Put your cane down on the floor with the tip upright, and you can even have it at a slight angle. But you want to bend it over and use your thumb to pop that cane off. I found that to be the easiest way. And when you're replacing that, you can use one thumb to help lift it up and the other thumb to bend it up and over off the screw that it sits on. You know, that rubber, it stretches. So it'll stretch up and over that screw. And then when you're putting it on, it's hard to put it on just straight down. So if you put it on at an angle, also just reversing what you did before, and this time, you know, you could start it with the at an angle, and even holding the cane with your left hand, even pressing down. If your thumbs don't work, use your palm to get more pressure on that, and it should pop on and over onto that screw. Hopefully that helps, and you guys could practice that, you know, if you would, and see if that works for you. That's what I did. What do you do, Winford?
Okay, yeah. So again, it's for me. I hold it at an angle, like you're saying, with my left hand kind of supporting near the tip. But I take the index of my right hand and I put it on top and the thumb under it. So I just kind of circle it, and then I roll it off of there. And a couple of alternatives for putting the tip back on is you can sit down. Put the tip on the floor, line your cane up with it, but you got to have your hand, your left hand, like close to the cane, about a couple of inches away from the tip.
And from the bottom.
From the bottom. Let the screw, line the screw right up with the hole, and put both hands on the cane really close to that tip, and then just press down with your body weight, and that'll just pop that tip in there.
This is Jerry. I just wanted to make a comment. You have to be really cautious. This is one of those great problem solving moments, because it is so easy to break the end of that cane off if you are not careful. And let me tell you, I have tried at an angle putting that, because there's different screws on the end of that cane. And you really have to be close. It takes perseverance, because there's times when I use my instep to take that tip off, and there's times when that won't work. But you have to be very careful when you press down on the end of that cane, because when you pull up on it, you can easily break it right off. So it does take some finesse, but I think it definitely takes some hands-on and trial and error, because everyone has a different way to do it. Because sometimes, and there's nothing worse than a wobbling cane tip. I cannot stand that.
Oh,
and so I've actually used scotch tape. I've used all kinds of things on the bottom to make it stay firm.
Okay, we're down to 5 minutes, and we got three hands. How about 970?
Hi, this is Estelle again. Just a quick comment. I'm currently reading a book called The Care and Feeding of the Long White Cane, and I was reading it mostly to practice my Braille, but I've learned from the book, as well as I'm learning so much from your program. And one of the things they teach in the book is what he calls rule number one, and this has to do with having a cane with you. And the rule is, when the body is in motion, the cane is in rhythm. In other words, wherever you're moving to, you should have that cane with you. So I just wanted to add that. Thank you.
I like that.
Me too.
Okay, Judy Nelson.
Hi, I just have a quick question. I'm very new with the cane using, and I just wanted to know, how do you know when your tip needs to be replaced?
Oh, yeah. Well, you'll know.
When the metal is loose from the rubber, it's a good sign.
Okay, yeah, so the metal doesn't wear out or scratch or anything.
Well,
it just gets really loose.
No.
The metal.
Go ahead.
The metal is going to wear out the more you use it. If you look at the tip, it's kind of rounded, beveled around the edge. You know, as you use it more, the flat part of that tip where that edge meets is going to start to wear out. Now, when you definitely know, it's like as you're walking along right now, and you, if you drag it on the carpet, if it doesn't snag, it's still in pretty good shape, but eventually it's going to start snagging on carpet. So then you're going to know that there's edges that are starting to get loose, and then eventually it's going to fall off.
Alert.
So, okay. and so you guys, speaking of that, you want to make sure that you buy extra tips. And when you go out, you always have a tip in your pocket or your purse. Because it might get caught in the door, and now you're without a tip, so you want to have a spare with you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you may not know that your tip is it's inside that metal with rubber. It's rubber encased with metal, and when you wear it down, that bottom part of the tip will separate from the top, and it'll leave you with just a ring, and you'll have just black rubber on the bottom of your tip. And that's a great indication that it's time to replace it. But always
sure.
A spare with you if you can. And, you know, right now you're not using the cane a lot, so it won't happen anytime soon. But the more you use it, the more you become familiar with it, and the more you'll wear down your cane tip sooner, faster and faster, the more you use your cane. So always carry a spare with you if you can.
Okay, 816.
Cynthia has a question.
Yes. Could you talk about using a cane in snow and ice, especially in areas where the sidewalks aren't cleared or you don't have a sidewalk? Thank you.
Well, being from Colorado, I'm familiar with that. I don't know how much you are, Winford.
Not much at all.
But using your cane, one thing about the metal tip is really great. You can really feel the difference with ice. With ice, it really glides over ice, and it's a great indicator that it's a very slick surface right there. But and so that would make one be more cautious, especially in the wintertime. But when you have snow, you can actually put a little more pressure on your cane. And it will, if it's light snow, you can still have your arc while using that cane, and you may even lift it up just a little higher, if the snow is even deeper. But, if not, then you can use, if it's really, really high, you can then go to your pencil grip and use your cane and keep it out in front of you and raise it up higher than normal. So we have to end this session, so we have to not go into Robert time.